Thank you and good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Stuart Mann and I represent the appellant S. Brian Moore. In this case, the court needs to decide if CRS 10-4-110.5 applies to the progressive policy of insurance held by S. Brian Moore. It's Mr. Moore's position that Progressive failed to provide the requisite 45-day notice, and therefore the policy renewed. And during the renewal period, he was in an accident, and therefore the policy covered him on the date of his loss. It is difficult to conceive. Well, 10-4-110.5 is a statute that is a consumer protection statute. It was enacted to provide the public, the consumer, with an opportunity in the event of a unilateral increase in premium to have the chance to go out and get a different policy. So the idea is that 45 days in advance of the expiration of the policy, an insurance company would send a notice, which was not a burdensome notice. Very simply, it would state that there was a increase in policy and the reason for that increase. It only needed to state those two things, and it would be sent to the insured via first class mail at their last known address.
Mr. Mann, if I may interrupt you, if that statute is a consumer protection statute, why does it use the phrase commercial exposures? That sure doesn't sound like a phrase you would use in a consumer protection statute.
Well, I think they tried to say that they were going to use this for certain types of liability policies, and they then enumerated them, such as automobile liability, physical damage, which was the type of policy that Mr. Moore had. It also mentioned fire and marine. It wasn't intended to cover certain other types. And if we look at 10-4-113, which is a statute called exemptions, it says that the Commission of Insurance shall have the authority to exempt certain types of policies from the notice requirements of 110.5. And it lists a number of statutes, and then it lists A through K, and under that are various types of policies that are not covered by the statute. And it's interesting, in 10-4-113K, it says, if the insurer is providing coverage for exempt commercial policyholders, which to me says the legislature knows the words commercial policyholders. If they had intended 110.5 to only apply to commercial policyholders, they could have easily stated this only applies to commercial policyholders, or this does not apply to personal policy lines. This does not apply to individuals.
Mr. Mann, it does say it applies only to commercial exposures. I mean, it sounds like you're splitting hairs here between commercial exposures and commercial policyholders. We have to give meaning to that phrase, but you just want to pretend it doesn't exist and move on to the types of policies mentioned.
I think it's hard to conceive that the legislature would want to exclude a class of consumers.
Why? I mean, they used a phrase, we have to give meaning to it. Why is it inconceivable that they would limit this to commercial policies?
Well, let's think about it. Corporations would get notices, limited liability companies, partnerships, sole proprietorships. Is it that if Mr. Moore, the law office of Brian Moore, had taken out the policy and he took it out for the same 1997 Continental car, that he would have been entitled, the law office would have been entitled to a notice? But since he as an individual took the policy, the legislature is saying no. We're giving special treatment to those entities, and we're not going to give them to the individual. It just seems that though if they were going to make that type of distinction, that they would have done it clearly in the statute, and they wouldn't have had this exemption statute in which they specifically outline the types of policies and the situations in which 110.5 does not apply.
I'm still waiting. I've read the briefs. I'm waiting in oral argument for some explanation of if commercial exposures doesn't refer to commercial policies, what it means. What's the alternative meaning?
Well, I mean, when Mr. Moore was in the accident and he suffered physical damage, he had to have that physical damage repaired. He went to a business. He had to pay money. That's a commercial transaction.
That's true in every single insurance. Every policy of insurance is, if you want to go that far, part of commerce. So it's commercial in that sense. That would render the words commercial exposure completely superfluous.
I think it's a big leap to say that the word commercial exposure intended to completely exclude individuals and individual policies from receiving this notice provision. If you look at Mr. Moore's policy of insurance, for example, it doesn't say anything about whether it's a commercial or a personal policy. It could easily be construed as a commercial policy. It's not designated as such. There is no real line in the sand of a commercial policy and a personal policy. What does that really mean? And where does the legislature draw that distinction between the two? I think what they were trying to say is that there are certain policies, and here's some examples of what they are. But there are other types of policies that it doesn't apply to. And for examples of those types of policies are title insurance policies, health insurance policies, life insurance policies. These are things that are alluded to in the 10.4.113 exemptions. If you follow the line of 113K, that's what it gets into. HMOs, hospital insurance policies, policies involving more than 25 employees, policies involving multi-millions of dollars. These are what commercial policies are per the legislature.
But I'm now a little bit more puzzled than I was before, Mr. Mann. Wouldn't health and life insurance policies be the kind of policies that consumers would have and that therefore would not be exempt from the provisions of 10.4.110.5?
I think that health insurance, if you look at the exemptions under 10.4.113, is not one that would be included. And there's also separate provisions for health insurance that have their own set of specific requirements in the statutes that are not, or that makes it obvious that it's not included in these types of policies. If you look at the legislative history and the language that they used, they used the words the customer. There was no reference whatsoever to a commercial entity versus a private individual. The legislative history talked about the customer or the insured.
But the customer or the insured simply begs the question of who the customer or the insured is.
But wouldn't they have said, we're only providing this notice for commercial entities in their discussion of providing the 45-day notice? And in Granite State versus Ken Carl Ranch, the court uses the word consumer. They use the statement people. Is that just corporations? And where do you draw that line? Is it a sole proprietorship? Do they get also commercial status, even though that's really just an individual doing business as a business entity? I think if the legislature really intended to carve out and give special treatment of notice to commercial entities, they would have discussed the statute in terms of the entity and not in terms of the type of policy. That's what the commercial exposure refers to, is the type of policy involved, not the type of insured who holds the policy. And that's why it says certain policies. Now, they probably could have done a better job telling us which certain policies, but they did go at 10.4.113 and talk about which types of policies were exempt from the requirements of 110.5.
But you're equating an exposure with a policy. Those are two different things. You're saying commercial exposures are types of policies. An exposure to liability is not the same thing as a policy covering the liability.
It's true. I mean, there's no doubt that it could have been clearer. But I certainly think that if they had intended to break into two parts who was entitled to notice, that they would have said commercial policy holder or individuals are not entitled to notice under this provision. It would have been a very simple sentence to do so. And to take the words commercial exposure and then turn that word into commercial policy holder is a huge jump. One that I don't think the case law or the legislative history supports.
Counsel, if I can, I wanted to give you a chance to respond to an argument that I believe your colleague here advanced. And I want to make sure that I understand it and that you've had a chance to answer it. What we're concerned with here is the meaning of this phrase, a policy of insurance that provides coverages on commercial exposures. So far, so good. Now, your colleague here has observed that this phrase appears in two related statutes, 10.4.109.7 and 10.4.110.1. And because these statutes are related, the phrase, as it appears in our statute, should be construed in the same way in these related statutes. So far, so good?
Yes.
If we did adopt the interpretation that you advance, these related statutes would conflict with other specific provisions that govern personal automobile policies that appear later in that statute. So the question to you is, how can your position, your interpretation, be tenable in light of the statutory conflict that it would create?
Well, I don't think that this statute creates any conflict with other statutes, although I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
And I think that there may have been an oversight on their part in the drafting, because they specifically included the words automobile liability, but I think in those other statutes, there might not have been that specific of a reference. And so the conflict that occurs with those statutes doesn't occur with this one. There is no other statute in Part 6, which talks about automobile liability, that addresses increases in premium. There's ones that address cancellation that they've cited to. They address non-renewal. This is not a non-renewal case. And there's one that addresses the household exclusion. But none of them address policy increases. And the public is entitled to be given advance notice when they're going to do it. Because you have to think about it this way. The public doesn't really know if it's going to be $25 more. They don't know if it's $50 or $100. When you get your policy premium in the mail, unless the insurance company tells you there's a policy increase, you probably don't know about it. And that's what this statute was designed to do, is to advise the public, we're increasing your premium, and here's why. And I'll save the last 123 for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Mann.
May it please the court. Frank Patterson on behalf of Progressive Insurance. And I think Judge Russell has touched on the key point here, and Judge Jones has also addressed it earlier. The real question is whether 110.5 applies or not. And under every rule of statutory construction, it does not. Let me start first without going into 109.7 or 110, just to start with the language of 110.5. As Judge Jones noted, to accept the interpretation of Mr. Moore would be to write out of the statute the language about commercial exposures. It would be to write out of the title of the statute certain policies of insurance, because according to Mr. Moore, it would apply to every policy of insurance. And not only would it write out of that one statute, both its title and a portion of it, it would write out of existence 10-4, 602, 603, and maybe 604. That's the problem with the interpretation of Mr. Moore here. 10-4-110.5 was written for commercial policies or commercial exposures, policies of insurance that cover commercial exposures. Individual policies, non-commercial exposure, are what's governed by 10-4, Chapter 6, 10-4-602, 603, etc. And part of my preparation was to invite the court to compare 109.7, 110 with 602 and 603. 109.7 and 110 have the exact same beginning language as 110.5. They talk about commercial exposures. The first four or five or six lines of those three statutes read exactly the same. One is about non-renewal, one is about cancellation, and one is about increasing premium. And the reason that they're all tied together is because all of them deal with the commercial exposure. And I think when you compare those to 602 and 603, that demonstrates our point. 602 and 603 are non-renewal and cancellation of a personal private liability auto policy. If, in fact, Mr. Moore's argument is accepted, neither 602 nor 603 has any relevance or application whatsoever. And when we do the comparisons, let's start with 603. That governs the notice of cancellation for an auto policy. 109.7 governs the notice of cancellation for a commercial exposure. They cover the same thing, one in a private policy, one in a commercial exposure. Same thing happens, I've been saying 602 and 603, it's really 603 and 604. 604 covers non-renewal for an auto policy, a private auto policy. 110 governs non-renewal of a commercial exposure, which might be an auto policy. Again, accepting Mr. Moore's argument, 603 and 604 get written out of the statute books because the language of 110.5 as he reads it supersedes all of that. I think the simplest, the central question that you folks may want us to answer is there a reason the legislature would differentiate a commercial exposure and a personal exposure? And why in this instance would they have a 45-day notice for a commercial exposure and in some instances a range of 10 to 30 days for a private person? And I think there are plenty of reasons for that. One, think about the process of buying insurance in a commercial setting versus a family setting. If any of us, and that's why Chapter 6 applies to the personal family type of auto purchase, if any of us wants to change insurance, or if any of us gets a notice that our premium for the next quarter is going to be too high, it's incredibly easy to go out and replace it. You can go walk down the street and find 50 insurance companies, or you can go online and find a replacement like that. And in the personal, private, family type of insurance covered by Chapter 6, there really isn't any negotiation. The insurance companies have a form, you apply, you either get their insurance or you don't qualify for their insurance. That's why it's only a 10 to 30 day period of time for giving notice of intent not to renew or cancellation. In a commercial setting, you have a business, and in sometimes very big businesses that have large policies and need additional time within which to decide, okay, we've gotten either an intent not to renew or a huge increase in premium, not the $14 we're talking about here, but we may be talking thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars of change. Those folks in those businesses in a commercial exposure need the additional time to work within their corporation and then to go out and negotiate their policies. In a commercial setting, very often policies are negotiated. And that's why I suggest to the court that the legislature would have increased the time permitted to commercial entities or commercial exposures, whereas in Chapter 6 for personal ones, you don't have that. Our position in the trial court is that Chapter 6 doesn't have any requirements when the insurance company intends to renew. When the insurance company intends to renew, as it said in this case, there is nothing in the statutes that requires them to send out any notice whatsoever. But as a matter of course, in good business, insurance companies want their people to, their insureds, to remember to pay their premiums. So they send out a notice at least 30 days beforehand, and then the reminder at 10 days. I have another example in my notes as to why there might be a reason for the legislature to differentiate between the family type of policy we have here and a commercial exposure. Again, talking about the 10 to 30 day gap for family matters and 45 days or more for the commercial. If you think about any normal family's daily experiences, everybody's busy, everybody works, everybody has bills to pay. The legislature has created this no more than 30, no less than 10 gap. And that would assist a normal consumer, a non-commercial consumer. If somebody were to send me or any normal family a reminder, hey, in 6 months you have to pay an increase in premium, so don't forget that 6 months from now. The legislature said that's real possible that all of us in our daily busy lives might forget a notice that far out. So we want it to be much closer to the renewal period if in fact you're going to renew or non-renew or cancel. More than 10 days, though, before the expiration. That's because even if we can't act immediately, we can act fairly expeditiously. 10 days is enough for the normal family to go out and find a replacement policy.
Well, Mr. Patterson, let me ask you a question similar to what I asked Mr. Mann. It sounds like, from what you're describing, that the statute is not really a consumer protection statute because it provides notice for commercial policies, and yet 603 and 604 don't require advance notice of policy increases for consumers. Is that correct?
Partially. It depends on your definition of consumer. Corporations are consumers of insurance products.
Well, let me amend my question to say, instead of consumer, private family policies, as you were describing them.
Correct. My reading of the legislative history, and I don't think the legislative history is of much use because of the vague and generalized terms that they used when talking about it, but it was in terms of, they even thought about doing a 90-day advance notice. That is in the legislative history, which suggests, again, it's more of a corporate or commercial type of thought process going on when they were enacting the statute. But for the personal family one, that's not the intent of 110.5. It's just not. If they had intended to actually mean consumer to mean individuals who go out and purchase this versus businesses or entities, then they would have defined consumer in that manner. But I think even in Granite State, they talk about consumers. Well, businesses are consumers. And I've got a couple of minutes. Let me respond to something that Mr. Mann raised in trying to differentiate businesses versus individuals. Businesses also don't have to be huge. You can have a commercial exposure in Mr. Moore's law practice. If Mr. Moore had gone to the insurance agent and said, hey, I've got a fleet of cars that the people at my law firm use and that I use in the course and scope of my business, and we do a lot of driving in the course of our business, that is a commercial exposure. And he could have obtained a commercial policy with probably higher premiums because you're talking about more people, more cars, and more driving. That's a differentiation between Mr. Moore buying a policy where he and his wife are the named insureds and their home is the address to which the policy is written, so that is a family exposure and not a commercial exposure. Those are all the examples I had for the panel. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
One question, counsel. I understand that your colleague's argument here, Mr. Moore's argument, rests in part on the assertion that the statute isn't limited to commercial policies. My question centers on the factual observation that Mr. Moore did not hold a commercial policy. The trial court made such a finding of fact?
The trial court, I believe, made a finding of fact. This was not a commercial policy. It was written to Mr. Moore and his wife at their home.
And do you understand Mr. Moore to be challenging that factual determination?
I do in the briefing. I don't think that they presented any evidence to challenge that at the trial court. The trial court indicated at the end of its order that it was unsure whether the burden of proof or the burden of going forward rested with one party or the other. He determined the burden of going forward rested with Progressive to at least establish the existence of a policy, the date at which it expired, and the fact of non-payment. And then I think he believed the burden of proof following that there was some violation of statute rested with Mr. Moore, and that Mr. Moore failed to establish any evidence, including that this was a commercial policy or not a commercial policy.
Thank you.
I had one other thought, and it just slipped my mind. But
all the time.
Unless there are any additional questions. Oh, I know what the thought is. Section 113 and the exceptions that Mr. Moore has raised as allegedly proof that the 110.5 applies. Keep in mind that 113 applies to all of those other statutes besides 110.5. I think it says 109, 110, even the medical malpractice ones. In that series in Chapter 1, I think it may be 104, 105, 106 in that range, there are the same types of exceptions for medical malpractice policies as there are for commercial policies. And in our argument, that's evidence, further evidence, that Chapter 1 and those various statutes within it are for specialized situations, be it medical malpractice or be it commercial exposures, and they are not applicable to the entire gamut of automobile insurance, as Mr. Moore argues. So looking at the exceptions in 113 do not provide us any guidance. In fact, they demonstrate that these other statutes in Chapter 1 are evidence of specialized insurance situations and not broad generalized applications.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I think the policy itself is the evidence of whether or not it's a commercial or a personal policy, and there is nothing in there that would indicate that it is a commercial or a personal policy. It is a policy that covers commercial type of exposures that Mr. Moore was subjected to out in the world. I just want to bring you to the legislative history and a statement by Representative Groff. And it says the notice of a rate increase or a significant change in their policy to the insured, to the person that is being insured, by 45 days prior to cancellation of the policy or prior to the deadline of the policy. They are not referring anywhere to commercial entities, to only commercial policyholders. This is the only place where a premium increase to a policyholder is required by an insurance company to give them notice. Nowhere else in the statutes, anywhere, does it provide for that scenario. This is the consumer's chance to know. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mann. Thank you again, both Mr. Mann and Mr. Patterson. We very much appreciate your arguments this afternoon. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.